For June the 7th, 2019, we talk about Vermintide 2, Ape Out, and we ask you which threequel is your favorite. Welcome to Level 287. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for understanding us being away last week. We record on Monday evenings, and last week was Memorial Day, so we decided to take a day off and enjoy ourselves.
I was busy. I don't know about that shit. Enjoying myself. Working.
I recorded with Gary in the afternoon. Yeah. It was like 5 hours. It was a lot. But it was an evening. The sentiment remains.
Yeah, I had like a couple of hours where I was able to just like not do anything, which is very, very rare. So that was very nice.
That's cool. Yeah. So what you been up to, Jala?
Some stuff. So, in the last few weeks, I have been working on a massive deep clean project. I think I mentioned that before, but I finished that finally. Now I have a list of stuff that I need to sell and other things like that to do. But I'm taking a break from that for a while because I've been real busy and I started my bulk training, and also, I'm also doing ruck training with my rucking group, and then also over the weekend I did another event. I did a 6-hour Go Ruck Light in honor of the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
Oh yeah.
So, basically in these things, you put on a weighted pack and you do PT and you carry heavy shit for miles and you do whatever cadre tells you to do. Well, in this one, we did, some PT. We got put in the back of a hot U-Haul truck, and we were driven somewhere and then just basically kicked out of the truck and told to carry all these sandbags and logs and shit for some distance until we got to a beach, and then we reenacted Normandy. So that was the thing that happened.
Was the U-Haul supposed to represent like a drop ship, like a one of the boats that pulls up to shore?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and when we were doing the whole storming of Normandy thing, it's like we were marched out into the surf, told to get, dunk underwater, and then after that we had to crawl up to the beach and stuff. So, and then we also did some other PT, like the Tunnel of Love in the surf, which that was actually really entertaining, not really for me, but like for cadre because of me. Now the Tunnel of Love, what that is everybody stands shoulder to shoulder, and then you all go down into a plank, and then you pike up and stick your butt in the air.
Okay.
On one end, the person on the very end does a low crawl underneath everybody else, and then pikes up at the end once they finish, and once they get to the other side.
Okay.
Then the next person goes, and the next person goes until everybody has gone through the Tunnel of Love. And so when we started, I was the very, very last person to go. So when we started, we were actually pretty close to the shoreline. But as we kept going, people kept on veering off into the surf. Now, I'm a small person.
Right.
And I wear contacts. And what this meant is I got sand and brine in my eyes, my contacts.
Christ.
And there were a lot of noobs who were like not conditioned for this, so they could not hold themselves up, and they were on their knees, and so I was yelling like, get your asses up. they were dying laughing because I was barking orders at everybody because I was so pissed. Because if they would just get out of the way, one of the things that sets me off more than anything else is when anything is in my way. Don't get in my way. Like, I will, like, that is why when I'm in a grocery store, I use reusable bags. I fill them. I get out of there. I do not use a cart because I can't maneuver. So I want to get in and out as fast as possible. I do not want to deal with people. Crowds don't bother me because I'm claustrophobic. They bother me because they are slow and they are stopping me from getting where I want to be. So that's my normal MO. But also, if I could just get through, then we would be done and we would move on to something else. Like, get the fuck out of the way. What the hell? So then when I was at the end, Kadri was like, were you yelling at all of those people? And I was like, fuck yes, I was. You know, anyway, by the end of the event, Kadri, the two of them that we had, both told me that I am, like, what did he say? They said that the event was beneath me and I need to be doing harder events.
Okay.
And then they were like, you need to do an HTL, which is a heavy, tough light, which is 20 to 24 hours event, followed by a 12 to 14 hour event, followed by a 4 to 6 hour event back to back with like a couple of hours in between as a break. And that's it. So it's basically 48 hours with very little rest and no sleep. And that, he's like, you should do that. And I'm like, no, that's all right. I'm going to be doing a tough light, which is 12 to 14 hours, followed by a 4 to 6 hour event in August. But that's still not 24 hours. That's a very, very busy and very long day, but it's still one day. It's not multiple days. So,
yeah. No, I think so. Is the next level up from that just like 12 straight hours of some dudes with hammers just working you over?
double heavies after that, which is 20 to 24 hours back to back. And
Jesus.
Like there's other ones on top of that. Then you go into GORUCK selection, which is like a usually about 72 hours to who knows how many several days of you know the treatment.
So, right.
So yeah, but like as usual, I got mistaken for military. This happens a lot. I guess it's just because I have muscle and I have attitude and I have confidence.
Well, and also when you're shouting at people to get their asses down the line.
Yeah, well, I'm not like that when like I'm training people, but when I like this is a totally different situation. You know?
Yeah.
Like all bets are off. And the thing is, I was giving people hugs. I was encouraging them all the rest of the time. But the moment they were in my way, they became enemies. So
that's great.
But yeah, but it was a lot of fun. And other than that, I also am, speaking of training, I am training a cosplayer friend of mine named Jake, who is basically the official Kakashi of Crunchyroll. And so Crunchyroll being streaming service of anime online. So, and Kakashi is a very popular character from Naruto. So,
except he's supposed to be super, super skinny.
Say what?
Supposed to be skinny.
Yeah. So?
Yeah.
So I feel like intensive athletic training is...
for all different types of athletic levels. This is not like I'm training Jake to go do a double heavy. Okay.
Yeah,
like,
it's not like...
No, this is just like toning and stuff. Okay.
She but, won't make an accidental Goku.
Right. No. I. Okay. Anyway. So, but yeah, also, he has, prints and stuff that he sells, and he also does Naruto headbands, and I want him to do like my Fireheart Fitness logo on a Naruto headband and of course make it orange so I can wear that and I like rock that and stuff because I am that nerd that will do that. I will do that.
Nice.
So Orange speaks about that. But anyway, you can find him on Instagram at Suki SUKI_cosplay and check out all of his stuff. Pretty awesome.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I've been up to.
Yeah.
I was going to have a suggestion. You should co-op the Ruck group and just turn it into like a moving service. You just rush everybody's like bed and dressers to wherever they're going next.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that that's actually already been basically a thing. Like, you remember how I was doing that project of remodeling shit and having to level my building and
you,
do all this heavy lifting?
You brought some people in to lift a house.
Yeah, and I was like, Ruckers, come on, you can do this. And they're like, sure, let's do it. Sounds like fun. And then they had already referred to themselves as a moving service, so they apparently have done that as a thing before.
Yeah. That's cool. I don't want to alarm anybody, but there is an adorable cottontail juvenile rabbit right outside my window, and I'm losing my shit. Continue, David, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's just, I mean, now would be the time to release Greta.
Unleash the Greta.
No, she doesn't go outside is the thing.
Ah.
Yep. No, she just yells at me when she sees me outside. She yells at me a lot.
My bird does not like the outside world, which is good because Fiara had no fear. And my prior cockatiel, Fiara, had no fear of the outside world and would just like fly out.
She was a literal flight risk.
Yeah, well, and then she also like would get out and I would get her back. Like I would call to her when she's in a tree and she'd come and then we go home. And then people thought it was nuts because they were like, your bird just came back to you. Like, what the hell?
Yours doesn't.
Yeah, and it's like my bird flies around the house all the time and I trained her to come to me. Yeah. I don't know. So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, what's going on in everybody else's worlds other than the very Peter Cottontail rabbit situation going on over there?
Yeah, no, I've been busy with family stuff, helping with younger family member graduated high school, and so I was conscripted to help with their party, which was fun. And then my parents are getting ready to move, and so if you can send some of your Ruckers up, Jala.
Right, make it nice and easy for you.
They're hiring people. Fortunately, I don't have to import movers from Texas. But yeah, helping them do that. Yeah, just a bunch of good.
The challenge could be like first to get there. Okay, guys, you've got this many days. It's a time hack.
Around the world in 80 days. Yeah, no, but that's about all that's going on right here. And the rabbit is gone, so I'm no longer distracted. How about you, David?
Not too much. I've got a big 4-day martial arts seminar this weekend.
Hmm.
So that's kind of my big thing I'm gearing up for. So
have you continued doing lightsaber kata?
Yes, I have. It's been a little bit on hold recently, just because, you know, getting ready for the seminar and stuff. But yeah, I've continued doing the most improbable martial art possible.
Fun. Yeah. And rounding things out, Ben, how about you? What you been up to?
Yeah, I had a lovely weekend. I went for a bike ride along like Ballard, like north of Seattle. And you can like go along the waterfront. So that was really pretty. And I took a road trip to the town of Leavenworth, which is like a tiny German kind of tourist trap, but you get to drive through the Cascade Mountains. And so it's super pretty. I hadn't seen that before.
Yeah, I am real. Ooh. I'm real jealous of the scenery you have up there.
Yeah, I did not know it existed. So
photos.
Yeah, I'll post those in chat. I'll get on that.
Yeah. Yay. Yeah, while he's doing that, I can take us into the usual stuff. We got the usual kind of show for you. Starting out with the things we've been playing, moving into a multiplayer, and then finishing out with some stories that we found real interesting. So, any objections to getting rolling? Okie doke. So, let's get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, it appears that you've been away the longest, so what have you been playing?
All right, so I got two things that are real short, and then I got one thing that I will talk about, like, for real. So I wanted to mention that I started a game called Bird Story Plus. Bird Story Plus is a bird flight simulator. Nah, that doesn't sound like it's right up my alley. Anyway, so it's a simple black and white hand-drawn kind of aesthetic to it. And I was surprised because, like, I went through this level and it's actually kind of challenging because it's like talking about how it's so zen. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be like one of those chill pass out while you're playing at games in bed, you know? Mm-hmm. But no, there's a boss fight. I was like, what the shit is this? Oh my god. And like they have a life bar and you gotta fight. I'm like, whoa, what is this? So I finished about a level and a half or so before I had to stop for various reasons, but I put images of it and some video, more importantly the video, because the video is kind of not so up on my Twitter, and I will find for you as soon as I get there some video. Wait. Of that. So that was a kind of fun experience. I look forward to playing more of that because it's kind of neat.
This is an iOS game?
No, it is not iOS. It is on Switch, although it probably was also on some kind of a mobile device. I don't know. But here's just one of the various videos. I just dropped it for you. Part of the boss fight.
Okay.
So, there were two bosses, and basically they would cause stuff to fly at you and things to come up out of the ground, and you had to dodge it and then basically trick the enemies into hitting those things that they put up in front of your path.
Okay.
So, like on this last video, you will see the boss running into that and losing a bit of the life bar. So, interesting little game. Very weird.
It looks like it controls like Star Fox almost.
I don't know. I never played a Star Fox.
Oh. Yeah, so. The third-person arcade flight kind of thing. Yeah, it looks similar to this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will just trust you because I don't know. So there's that. And actually, the last thing that I the other shorter thing that I had that I played, I will wait until the end to talk about because I co-opted it with David.
Okay.
So I'll talk about that last. But the other thing I played was a game called My Big Sister, and this is a little adventure game that is a horror-themed game. It's got an interesting premise that I really don't want to get into too deeply for fear of ruining story beats for anybody, but I will tell you how it starts, which you can see in the very first few minutes of the game. So you play as a little 12-year-old smart-ass named Luzia. And the game starts you in your house where you're waiting for your mom, who is a nurse, to come home, and your older sister, Sombria, tells you to go to bed, and you can't sleep, so you go looking for Sombria, and you find blood smears downstairs that lead outside, and you're like, what the hell? So you go outside, and you see a truck in front of your house that you don't recognize, and you run over there, figuring immediately that your sister is being kidnapped, and she is.
Okay.
So you jump in, and it starts to drive off, and you and your sister are abducted, and it's a more detailed story involving witches and family feuds and petty desires, because but your sister is transformed into a yokai, which is a Japanese ghost or spirit. And you will see on the main see that she is a yokai on the main image for the game.
Right.
You as Luzia are basically seeking a way to break the curse on your older sister in order to return her to her human form.
Does she want to return to her human form?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, like, you're just trying to go home.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And there's multiple endings to it, and I looked up a fact about how to get the various endings, just because, like, they're little weird things that you do. And the only thing that impacts the ending is literally the last several actions that you take in the very last chapter of the game. So everything that you do up to that point, it doesn't really matter what order you do anything. You still get to that same place. And this is another Switch game. I neglected to mention that. So,
yeah.
But it is also on Steam. I know that. It's rated like 9 out of 10. People love this game. Yeah. And, those are the two main games that I played.
Is there any kind of, like, puzzle-solving stuff going on, or is this mostly a walk and talk 'em up?
Walk and talk, and then you have to figure out what item to use where, and that's about as puzzly as it gets. So there's that, and then at the very end of the game you kind of have to figure out what the hell you want to do, and some of it to get some of the endings to get the best ending, it's actually a real weird counterintuitive thing that you have to like go through to get the best ending.
That sounds about
so,
right.
Yeah, so it's basically, you know, a typical adventure game in that sense.
Yeah.
So, and it kind of runs the field between, there are parts where it actually gets kind of creepy, and then there are a bunch of parts where, because you play a little smart-ass character who is the little kid, the little sister, and, you know, like, they're both, like, the Sombria is a teenager or, you know, early 20s or something, but young enough that they still fight all the time. So it's just, like, it just reminded me of, like, when I was little, you know, because I have only one sibling who is an older sister. So, you know, just like the bickering back and forth and all that other crap just reminds me of just stuff when I was really, really young. So That's believable, but it doesn't necessarily make for the best dialogue all the time.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, like, I was real kind of enthused about it when I first started it up. And then once the story beats started coming out, I didn't really know what to think about it. And then by the end of it, I kind of settled on, you know, this is a pretty good game. I don't know if it's 9 out of 10. I would say something like 6 or 7 out of 10. But it's a pretty good little game, and it plays quickly. You know, it's low frustration levels and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's not like if you catch it on sale, as I did, for I don't remember how much it was, but only a couple of dollars or a few dollars probably. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, definitely I would recommend checking it out.
Would you
just because
Would you say that this is a good candidate for streaming?
It could be something like that. I would say, you know, just understand that some of the story beats are going to get a little weird.
Okay.
And when I say that, I just mean, like, when you hear somebody say something, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, so that's a big reveal. And then somebody else says something contradictory. And the kind of the point of it is you have to kind of come to your own conclusions about literally who you are in, mm-hmm. you know, what your role is and, you know, all of that stuff. But the game doesn't really indicate to you a very clear picture of, you know, the right way, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So, like, you know, it doesn't very clearly, you know, bleedingly obviously say, no, really, this is you. You did the thing.
Right.
And if you think that's what it's doing, you're wrong. So,
yeah.
You know.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that you need to pay attention to the story, even with all the, you know, like, bickering. And it is like a lighter-hearted game overall. Mm-hmm. There are, like I said, some places where, you know, you're just going along and then all of a sudden it gets creepy out of nowhere. And then there's other points where it's just really over-the-top ridiculous and you just kind of aren't sure if you're supposed to be laughing or not. But, you know, it's a quirky little game. Yeah. I think at the end I definitely would say that I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but it is a pretty solid title. So, yeah. My Big Sister on Switch.
I like the pixel art. It's very attractive.
Yeah. So, that's the other thing. Does anybody else have any questions about My Big Sister before I talk about the last thing? No. Okay. So, last thing, David, you and I, and Greg and Dulce, which Cole.
Yes.
I hate to break it to you. You've been saying it all wrong. Duruce is
okay.
Dulce.
Dulce, okay.
Dulce, like, you know, sweet, the word sweet in Spanish.
Okay. Dulce.
Dulce, so you,
okay.
Yeah, Dulce. So
okay.
That is her name.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So we all got together and played Vermintide 2. Yeah, a couple of rounds of that. And boy, did we get creamed the first time we played. Oh, my God. Like, we could
not
do the thing.
We're not supposed to tell
them
about that.
I wasn't streaming, so there's no documented evidence other than what I say. And, you know, whatever. It's fine. I don't care. I own it. I ain't ashamed. So, anyway, like, we died a lot.
That's really funny.
Then after that, man, we hammered through the second level like nobody's business. That was, you know, super smooth. But it was just Dulce had never played Vermintide at all, the first one or anything. And then, you know, none of us except for David. David's the only person who had played Vermintide at all recently. So we were all kind of like getting back into the game groove and kind of building those neural pathways, you know. So, mm-hmm.
And I was playing a character that I hadn't played before, so.
Yeah, there's also that, but I mean, you were still top in everything because, you know, you were familiar and knew what you were doing and had been playing it. So, you know, that's still good. I think what the main thing that really helped us out was once we started gaining some levels and then we got better gear, because when you first start out, you got, you know, your level one can only kill small, tiny rats in the sewer. And we're not talking about actual Vermintide vermin, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah. As opposed to the, you know, bus size version vermin that you eventually have to go up against.
So overall, the only main comments I want to talk about Vermintide 2 versus the original game. So it's basically a sort of Left 4 Dead style, but in the Warhammer universe, and you know, like Lord of the Rings kind of, because you know, you play dudes with axes and bows, you know, like there's an elf with a bow and whatever. But their banter continues to be entertaining. The graphics are way better, like obviously, but they are very good graphics. I mean, even on the medium settings, it looks good. It feels good. You know, it plays very cleanly. So overall, Greg and I both said it, and I believe you did too, David, when you first were talking about it, how much of an improvement it is over the last one, like mm-hmm. in pretty substantial ways, I think. So, David, what was like your favorite change or upgrade or whatever that they did on this game?
Oh, that's a tough one. So I think overall it was probably the dialogue. You know, they add a bunch of just fun dialogue. They also add a lot more segments where the characters will, you know, have discussions that kind of serve to illustrate their different personalities and views and how they view each other, which is a lot of fun. I think, though, you know, adding the chaos enemies, I feel like works really well. So in the previous game, you're fighting exclusively ratmen, whereas now you're fighting like chaos warriors, which are basically Warhammers, you know, in the same way that like the White Walkers are in Game of Thrones, the Chaos Warriors are kind of Warhammer's stand-in for the Vikings, and they're, you know, tend to be, you know, all mutated and crazy and raiding all the things.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think those would be my favorite. The leveling system has been upgraded a lot, although I don't think we've really gone far enough to see that much at this point. So that'll be something that'll kind of be fun to see how you guys react and, you know, use it once you get a little higher level.
Yeah.
So my point of reference here is Left 4 Dead. Is it like the rats are like the zombies, and then the chaos people are like the special zombies or the mutated zombies?
So actually, so basically there's both, you know, the equivalent of normal infected for rats and zombies. There's also a couple of what would kind of be considered equivalent to the uncommon infected. So, you know, enemies are mostly normal, but say, like, you know, have special attack powers or mm-hmm. patterns. But then the special infected are generally on the rat side are either the rats kind of have a little bit of a steampunk thing going on. So
as rats do.
Yeah, you know. So you can get ones that will chuck like poison cloud bombs or have chain guns, things like that. They also have occasionally what are called like rat ogres, which are just like giant bus size rats that chase you around.
Hmm.
On the chaos side, most of the special infected equivalent are the enemies that have become particularly corrupted by the forces of chaos, and so they're more or less like kind of Lovecraftian horrors, just masses of tentacles and whatnot.
Okay.
So the other probably the two biggest changes from Left 4 Dead are one, melee is by far the focus of the combat, and then also unlike Left 4 Dead where everyone's equivalent, mm-hmm. each mm-hmm. of the five characters have dramatically different play styles.
Okay.
So probably the most unique, I'd say, is the character that Dulce was playing, which is the Bright Wizard, which is, basically she's a character whose power has the ability to control and produce fire. But in the Warhammer universe, magic is both extremely addicting and extremely dangerous.
Hmm.
And so kind of her mechanic is as she casts more powerful spells and in rapid succession, her power builds up and she becomes more effective. However, she will also catch on fire. So you have to balance the degree to which you're using your spells versus, maintaining your health.
Okay. So you're kind of casting from HP, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly like if you cast at a set steady pace, you won't deal damage to yourself.
Hmm.
But in a case where, things go bad or you find yourself surrounded or something like that, you can make the decision to just go all out. And, depending on how far you go, you could, completely drop yourself in, a matter of seconds if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, similarly, I think what Jala, you played the elf who's kind of snipey, jumpy.
Yep. Of course. Who else would I play?
jumpy. Are there vantage points that you can get to that other people can't?
The game with the melee focus places a big emphasis on dodging and kind of skirmishing around enemies. So
okay,
yeah, and then I guess to round out, Greg played the dwarf who is either a tank or a gun-based character usually, and I played the witch hunter who is kind of the combination of gun and rapier.
Okay,
so
yeah,
lots of fun stuff.
Are there only four possible classes to choose from? Or are there more and you have different party compositions?
So basically there's a total of five characters. So the one character I haven't mentioned is the I think they call him like the Empire Soldier, who's, generally various forms of melee combat.
Okay.
But then each of the characters has three subclasses. So usually they break down to, they almost all have one that's range focused, one that's somewhat tanky, and then usually one that's either balanced or is just kind of more off the wall. So for example, the dwarf, one of the lore items in Warhammer is that, dwarves are, all about honor and that sort of thing, and also have a very, very strong cultural taboo against suicide.
Okay.
And so if a dwarf dishonors themselves in a way that they could, never recover from in life, they basically become what are called slayers, where they seek out, progressively stronger opponents to monsters to take down in the hopes of being killed. And so that's kind of the third job class for the dwarf. And unlike all the others, it can't equip any ranged weapons. It can only equip two different melee weapons. And then unlike the rest of the dwarf's weapons that are all like either slow or shields or things like that, it can dual wield axes.
Hmm.
So it's just a completely different play style that's all about, complete offense.
Yeah. Huh.
So.
Do you guys plan to play again?
Definitely.
Cool.
Especially considering we made it through one match, right?
Yeah, something like that. But not this weekend, because you got a thing.
Yes, yes. I will be getting attacked by various things in real life.
You'll probably, you're in New York, you'll probably see a rat.
That's true. That's
probably true. A human-sized rat, too.
Yeah.
You know, I still maintain most of the rats I've seen have been kind of cute.
Oh, I mean, yeah, rats are cute. I mean, you know, it's all about context, you know, like a pet rat in a cage. Like, okay, yeah, one that's, you know, just kind of, you know, sitting on the middle of your loaf of bread, playing, you know, texting his bros. Probably not a good thing. Who gave that rat a cell phone?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always impressed by the ones that are just like chilling, running down the subway lines. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, that just seems to me like a pretty pretty gutsy rat.
They've got it under control. Yeah. What else have you been playing, David?
Yeah, so the other thing I've been playing, unfortunately I don't have Dennis here to assist me on, because this is another thing I've been co-oping, but we did decide to check out Dauntless. Which is the, well, I was going to say, like, the more horribly named version of Monster Hunter, but Monster Hunter is kind of the, like, least effort name you could possibly give.
Yeah, it is kind of a 4:55 on a Friday name for a series, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So Dauntless is a free-to-play game that's very overtly inspired by Monster Hunter. So the basic premise is it takes place in a world in which the planet has apparently been broken up into various floating islands. And humanity has developed, you know, steampunk-style airships. And, you know, runs things on what's called etheric or whatever energy.
Okay.
That is these various elemental energy that is, you know, stored and can be harvested from giant monsters called behemoths, who also take, you know, tend to be humanity's biggest threat.
Yeah.
So you take the role of a slayer who's tasked with going around and, you know, killing off all the monsters, basically. And so that's kind of the premise in the nutshell, honestly. Kill monsters to make weapons and armor out of their outsides, to kill more monsters, to make more weapons and armors out of their outsides.
That sounds very Monster Hunter-y.
Yeah, it totally is.
How does it differentiate itself besides the art style?
You know, overall, I'd say, so I think there's two ways to see it, and I think both honestly are valid. It's much simpler, or, you know, less charitably could say, you know, dumbed down or stuff like that. On the other hand, I think a, you know, more positive and I think completely reasonable takeout would be it's, you know, very streamlined and, you know, kind of more, you know, it's very easy to get on, like play a hunt and get and leave. As opposed to Monster Hunter, which tends to, you know, involve a ton of, you know, tracking the monster down and, you know, chasing them all over the map and, you know, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
This is true.
Yes.
I played it very, very briefly at PAX South once upon a time before it was actually out. It was like an alpha or something. So, cool. Continue. Sorry.
So I'd say that's probably the biggest thing. It seems like the biggest stat difference I can think of is it seems like Dauntless emphasizes the elemental interactions a lot more than the than Monster Hunter does.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm sure there's things I'm thinking I'm missing, but those seem to be the biggest ones. So, so far, I think my favorite features of it, though, are one, they're doing the kind of the, the battle pass approach to free to play, which is a model I really like, because, you know, rather than just being like, hey, you should spend a, you know, indeterminately large amount of money on this game, there's a very defined, you know, how much you pay for, I think, in the neighborhood of like a 45-day season.
Okay.
And I want to say it costs something in the neighborhood of like $10 to $15. So it seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And the current season theme is basically ninjas. And it's very, very overtly like Naruto-esque. My favorite being one of the cosmetic items you can get is basically in effect emotes for how you like spawn into the game, and you can get one of the real iconic special abilities in the Naruto series is the substitution jutsu.
Okay.
Which basically will be, you know, a character will appear to have been, you know, stabbed or shot or, you know, otherwise killed, only to disappear in a puff of smoke and be replaced by a log. And you basically can get that as your entrance. So just like a log drops down from the airship and then puff of smoke and there you are.
Yeah.
So, the other thing I really like is some of the character designs. In particular, there's one of the monster designs are basically owlbears.
Okay.
However, the way they're animated and the moveset is conceived, they're kind of brawlers. So they'll like literally, you know, stand up on their hind legs and like throw haymakers.
Okay.
Can the bears have their heads turned like 180 degrees behind them?
Oh God.
Oh no, no. You cannot do the Rock'em Sock'em robots or whatever. Although that would be maybe a little morbid, but
well, you said owl bears, right? I was terrified at that concept.
You're thinking of bear owls.
You play D&D, you know, the classic D&D monster.
Yeah. Some of the doofiest monsters.
Yes, and one of the oldest. But
of the oldest ones.
Similarly, most of the monsters have some form of ranged attack, and in this case, the owlbear basically does the full-on Dragon Ball Z like Kamehameha at you.
Wow. Yeah, this sounds legally actionable.
You know. But so I just enjoy the fact, like, it also has, you know, more things you might expect, like, you know, it can take off and swoop down on you or, you know, attempt to bite you, things like that. But when it's not doing that, it is definitely kung fu fighting you, which is amazing and adorable.
Nice.
Yeah. Other highlights include like giant beavers, oriental dragons, just all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And so in another couple of months, they'll roll out another battle pass and have another season of it.
Yep, exactly.
Cool.
So I didn't realize apparently the game's been out for, or at least has been in like beta for a very long time. So this is actually like season 5. Although one of the big changes that I also think is kind of neat is they recently, you know, released on consoles and then made the game completely crossplay. Okay. So that's you know, kind of nice to see that, you know, Epic continues to be committed to this.
So yeah,
nice.
Can't wait for the inevitable Fortnite crossover.
Yeah, we're just dabbing into the distance. Oh, yeah. So Dauntless.
Yep.
Cool. Is that all?
That's it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yo, I got a short one this week. I've just been playing Risk of Rain. Hmm. That continues to be a pretty good multiplayer game in terms of just being something to do mindlessly while you can kind of hang out with friends.
Nice.
I got one of my friends who doesn't typically play multiplayer games to play, so that was a lot of fun. And all of us, or I think three of the four of us who were playing together, unlocked the ninja class at the same time. So we played around where we're all playing as the ninja class, and that was a lot of fun. Apparently there's a running theme to multiplayer games where they just add a ninja theme.
Oops, so but... ninjas.
This whole episode is just like ninjas and shit.
Yeah, weird. We did not plan that.
But, yeah,
well,
it was pretty
sweet,
though.
To be fair, no one plans for ninjas.
True.
The common theme of a lot of the runs that we've been doing is, like, try and find a syringe 3D printer. And that's where you can, like, turn random items into syringes, and syringes increase your attack speed. And it seems to be something that's, like, universally good for any class, is having your attack speed be 2x or 3x the normal speed that it is.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, so that's what we did. I think each of the runs we did like two runs for maybe an hour and a half to an hour each. So yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I think that's going to be kind of like a staple that kind of competes with Rocket League for the time being. But I haven't dipped my toes into Mordhau yet, but more and more of my Steam friends are playing that game. So have you guys seen that game or talked about it at all?
That's the medieval combat simulator, right?
Yeah, everyone says it's supposed to be like an older game called Chivalry that I've never seen or played. But
yeah, I've seen a lot of people playing it on my list, but I have not dipped in or anything.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah.
Apparently, you can be a person who plays a lute, though. Just run into battle with the loot.
Yeah, but just buff folks.
Do you get new ones from the loot box?
Jesus.
Oh, God.
Left myself open for that one.
I thought you were about to say my soul left my body when I heard that, because that's what I felt like. Dude, you're fine, David. Don't worry.
And, you know.
Yeah, just you, we left you open.
I don't think David was worried.
Hey, not my soul.
Oh, this is first person. Okay. Yeah, so I saw the trailer for it. I was like, oh, this is like For Honor, but I'm fine, huh?
Isn't For Honor for first person? No.
I think it's third person, maybe.
Ah.
Yeah.
From what I've seen of it, it's a lot of jank. It's a lot of just like three people running into three people and figuring out who you can run behind and kill really quickly.
To be fair, I feel like there's probably something to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably realistic, yeah.
I'm getting some real action Half-Life vibes from the footage that I'm seeing. None of us have played this though, so it's probably not.
Not that, talk about it too much.
It's probably not that fruitful to just.
When
like...
has that ever stopped anyone?
I don't know.
This is the grind.
Yeah,
this is the projection of the podcast is we're going to talk about playing games in the future and not actually play anything.
Yeah. Cool. And was Risk of Rain 2 all for you?
Yeah, I mean, we played Rocket League too, but you know.
Yeah. And, you know, air was dry, water was wet. Yeah. So for me, I have been playing, I've got two kind of short things and then one thing that I streamed. So on the Switch, they ran this Devolver Digital sale. And I was in the market for some indies, so I picked up two games on that, Ape Out and Minute. The first one I'll talk about is Ape Out. I saw some buzz about this on Twitter, from some folks, and then it kind of died down a little bit. Ape Out is a top-down brawler where you are playing as a gorilla who is escaping from a lab.
Okay, I think I might have heard of this.
Yeah, and the premise is super simple, but it is all in the presentation and the feel where it differentiates itself. So the art style, I think the art was done by Bennett Foddy. The game was not designed by Bennett Foddy, the co-op guy, but the art was done. And it's this super cool kind of monochrome with splashes of color, or like overriding color themes for individual levels. And everything kind of has this kind of like just rotating grungy texture over it. I would say go and watch a video of this. That would only partway convey what is going on here, because you really want to be in control of this, because the other part of the presentation is the music. The entire music track is handled by drums, specifically like jazz drums that are going on that are responsive to like what is happening or how you're moving. So like if you're standing still, you get like a little like brush hi-hat ride a little bit, like, hey, things are going. If you're moving, there's like a bongo. And as you do your gorilla smashes on people or throw people around, there are these big cymbal crashes. And if you're running at a big clip, you get like a tom-tom going. And it is like, it sounds really superficial, but it gets you into the flow of it. It is remarkable how responsive it is and how much it adds to a gameplay that is already like really fluid and weighty, as you're going, and it plays, it's like a less stop and start, Hotline Miami, because, you know, you will burst into a situation and you've got to figure out like, okay, do I punch, you figure out on the fly, okay, I got to punch this guy and then grab this other guy, use him as a human shield, take the shot and then throw his body at the guy who shot at me. So I can continue going. Ape Out is really fun.
The art style looks amazing on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of big on the ultra violence, right?
Yeah, it's super violent. Like you'll throw somebody into a wall and there'll be a big blood stain that pops out from him. But it's so stylized that it's kind of hard to feel it viscerally, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not repulsive, but yes, it is violent.
Okay.
Yeah. I recommend it. I think it's out on PC as well. Any questions about Ape Out?
No.
It looks sweet.
Yeah. The other one is Minute. This game came out a while ago, about this time last year, I believe.
A minute ago?
I missed an opportunity
you
on that. it came out about this time last year. It is a really charming little action RPG style thing where you are playing as a little guy who picks up a cursed sword, and you're trying to break the curse because the curse makes it so you only live for 1 minute. And so
as curses do.
Yeah. So you play this game in 60 second bursts. Now, when you solve quests or get other items that help you do things, those maintain. So the entire game is like this kind of series of repeated shuttle runs to accomplish what you need to accomplish, and, you know, make it so that you die at the last possible second and then respawn or get to a new spawn point so you can continue. It is a very brief game. I think that the kind of the speed run or the walkthrough that you see, it gets you through the game in about 25 minutes. For me, it lasted about an hour and a half because I'm bad at video games. the new game plus, at least the one that I got, it makes it so that you only live for 40 seconds. So you've got to figure out how to optimize your run for that. And so that's where the kind of magic of the game is getting that optimization. If you're doing a search for it, it's MINIT, not like minute as you would spell it, like a, you know, like an actual word.
It's like Minute if Minute was trademarkable.
Yes. But it has a super cute art style. It is monochrome, kind of black and white pixel art. It looks like it would be at home on a Game Boy Pocket. Yeah.
So the art style for me, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is dumb, is it reminds me of like TI-80 whatever games.
Yeah, that's another touch point on this. But yeah, it's really charming and really fun. Has like a limited combat system. It is really more about using the limited time that you have to figure out what your plan ought to be and then executing it. So you get what you need in order to work on the next thing. And it's not nearly as stressful as it sounds. Yeah.
It's so weird because I also picked up, when I got a sale game, I picked up 60 Seconds. So like, Yeah.
What?
Yeah, 60 Seconds. I will be playing that sometime in the nearish future on my Switch, but it's also on Steam and probably other things as well.
Yeah.
It's basically where you've got 60 seconds before a nuke goes off, kind of a thing. All so right. It's like a kind of survival thing where, you have to try to avoid the nuclear apocalypse in 60 seconds.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. No, we'll need to compare notes. I'm curious about that. Yeah. So any questions about Minute?
I finally figured out how to spell the name of the game, so now yes. I'm looking at images of it.
It's cute. It's a real cute game. I would like I don't know. Just the pixel art is it's super super minimal and iconic, I think. Yeah. The other thing is a game that I streamed. It is one of the few games that I started streaming that I just kind of put down because I didn't see myself finishing it. Darkwood. So this is the top-down survival horror game with a strong emphasis on survival, where mm-hmm. you're a guy who wakes up in this cursed forest, and by day the woods are full of monsters. By night, the monsters get serious and come after you, and you're trying to kind of make your way from hideout to hideout, fashioning items, fashioning materials into new weapons and upgrading them. And also barricading hideout walls and stuff like that. I didn't give up because I think the game is bad. I stopped because I was getting very, very frustrated with it. It's also a very lengthy game. I think that if I continued at the pace that I was going, I would have been streaming it for about 2 months, which is it's too much. So I decided to call it. It's not out of any kind of like lack of interest, because like the story bits and the parts where it got really, really spooky, not just kind of ambient spooky because you feel like you could die at any time. But the parts where, the story was trying to be spooky, it really landed, and it sold me much, much more than I imagined something with that art style and perspective would. Yeah, so like I was like halfway into it, and 20 games underscore discourse underscore 2019.txt. I wish it was either just a like 20% friendlier, or there were granular options so that I could fine tune it on my end. However,
which safe house did you get to?
I got to the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, the second out of four in the first chapter of the game. The game can't. So I feel bad like dropping it, because lots of people in the Hexcrank channel they requested it. Like it just recently came out on Switch, and people seem to really enjoy it. So I feel bad on one hand, because of that. It just wasn't landing, and I was getting angry. And I don't think I'm entertaining when I'm angry. People may disagree. I don't know. People laugh when I yell. But yeah,
so people laugh when I yell too. I feel you, Cole.
Yep. But no, it was neat. I'm happy that I did what I did. I may give it a few months and then watch for it to go on sale on Switch, because that's that seems like it'd be a good way to play it when you could just kind of shut it down
at night when you're away. In your bed.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So that's me. That's Darkwood. David, I know you played Darkwood. Do you have any questions about my experience with it?
No. So I'm trying to think. So you saw the village, right?
That's roundabout where I quit. So I saw the wedding and I saw the village.
Okay, yeah. So the wedding's actually a random event, kind of.
Okay.
So but yeah, so for what it's worth, I'd say the village is kind of where the story starts picking up.
Okay.
And yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of about the halfway point.
Okay.
And also, for sake of argument, like the the area basically after that, it's widely assumed that, like, it's just there's basically no point in spending the night there.
Okay.
The like standard way to do it is just to like do whatever you need during the day, and then just run, you know, once it starts getting to afternoon, run back to like the second area and do the thing.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, no, I mean, how did you like the kind of the night kind of mechanics? What strategy did you generally go with?
So I never really had a lot of opportunity to come up with a strategy, because in the first area, the knights are not necessarily that dangerous. Like, nothing's really trying to break in. So I just kind of sat there. In the second area, I would barricade everything and think that I was mostly in control. And then something would just show up and say, "What's up, motherfucker?" And then just I would die and wake up, and I wouldn't get my reputation for that day.
Okay, yeah. So did you have like the lights on?
Yes, had the lights on. I had the windows barricaded, the doors closed. I had furniture on both sides of the doors, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
So my general go-to was to keep the lights off at night in order to not attract attention.
Oh, weird.
And then, you know, you need to stand by the lights in case the ghosts come. But then, then to like actually keep them off and not move as much as possible, so you're not making noise and, you know, not, like I said, not attracting attention. Mm-hmm. And then usually, at least for me, I found, you know, once if things did go down, it's generally then in your best interest to just abandon all pretense of stealth and like run around outside fighting things or just kiting until daybreak comes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, there's different strategies. Like, the big flaw with that strategy is because you can't see anything and you're not moving around a lot, you're vulnerable to like the worm infestations taking over your area.
Yeah, those got me. Those got me at the last session.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, a real big bugbear in games, as opposed to a real big owlbear in games, is when the combat is so unforgiving that a mistake cannot be recovered from.
Sure. And I'd be interested to see, I wonder if maybe some of that's the Switch thing, because basically for me, once I got a fairly decent melee weapon, you know, either one of the staffs from the whatever they
were, savages, I think is what they're called.
Yeah. Or and then especially once you get some of the, like, was it the machete or the axe, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was generally able to kite or whatever, you know, kind of manage anything except for the, I forget, the actual monsters, the kind of pincer
Yeah.
But yeah, that I don't know if that's a control thing or just a thing or what.
Yeah, I played it on PC, so I felt like I had all the control that I needed, and I may just be inept. I'm willing to chalk it up to user error or just not enough time. Kind of working on controlling it, like working on learning the skill of playing the game. But yeah, I don't like it when you can't recover from a mistake. And I felt like there was not that much possibility, because, I don't know, for me, that leads to, if you can take a couple of hits and then make a comeback, that feels like a more, kind of dramatic and engaging encounter than two and you're down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's, the game tells you at the start that it's supposed to be harsh. So,
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Well, how do you guys feel about doing multiplayer?
I feel multiplied. I don't know. What am I supposed to be?
three style.
There's always zippers.
Three-quel? There are no zippers.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Everybody usually asks, what's your favorite series or your favorite sequel? But today we are going to ask about what your favorite threequel game is, whether that is the third one in the series, third expansion or DLC, or a reboot, or whatever. And thanks to Case for the question.
That's a good question. And people came out in force, A, and B, they were very creative with some of their answers. Some of them were things that I totally agree with, but we'll get to that. Going to start here with Devin, who says, the third expansion for Command & Conquer Red Alert Aftermath, had some of the best missions and units. It was the introduction that paved the way for the crazy units in Red Alert 2. Command and Conquer is one of those series like Saints Row that I forget there was ever a point when it wasn't just off the wall nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it was always pretty off the wall nuts.
Red Alert style. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite thing with that is my understanding is that all of the Red Alert takes place in an alternate timeline, but they all take place in the same, kind of continuity. So basically all the jacking stuff up you do in Red Alert is kind of the excuse for all of the other games having diverged from our history or something.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. It's a very complicated series. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, my vote has got to be Zelda Link to the Past. It took everything from the first Zelda game and amplified it and expanded everything, ultimately becoming a sort of blueprint for the future Zelda games.
Probably the most important third entry in a series. Yeah, I would say so. I would agree, rather.
Yeah, I think it's amazing playing that, and after having predominantly played the later games, and realizing how many of, for example, like the items and powers that really make a lot more sense in like a 3D Zelda actually came from Link to the Past.
Yeah, yeah. You get the hookshot and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Dan say?
Dan says, Streets of Rage 3. Best level set, music, and fidelity. My favorite in the series. Was a beat-em-up, correct?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of Sega's answer to arcade beat-em-ups. I know some people who would pick a fight with you over the music. People live and die by the Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack, but I have no dog in the fight. I just wanted to give you a heads up that folks might be coming.
I think none of them can be Double Dragon Neon. Which is that that's a fun game, cheating, but
that's
still.
That's a fun game. I never even, I don't think we ever finished that, did we?
I don't think so. My big problem with that from the soundtrack standpoint is all of the, there's a little jingle, like, music sample for all of your power-ups, which are theoretically supposed to be music singles. And I want them to be actual, like, full-length songs because some of them are really badass.
Nice.
Yeah, some of them are really, really good. Gotta say. Agree.
Let's see here. Jala, what does Martinus say?
Martinus says, Heroes of Might and Magic 3. The gameplay and music is just so damn good. Pretty much one of the best strategy games ever made, and most certainly the best in the Heroes of Might and Magic series. And also strategies in parentheses, because it could be the best strategy game ever made or just the best game ever made. Ever. Mm-hmm. The end. And did you skip Brian intentionally?
No, I didn't. Although
really?
I don't even know
if I believe you. because of that thing he did that one time?
Yeah, the scoundrel Brian Wade. No, I had Martinus highlighted there because that was the way that I marked for myself that should be my next one. But it totally backfired. I'll read Brian's.
Now you're forced to read the scoundrels.
Drat you, Brian. Heroes of Might and Magic 3 is a huge game. It's a very big game. That's all.
The like, biggest game.
Yeah.
Well, I like, in what way?
There's just a lot to it. The expansion packs are numerous and they're really well integrated. So it kind of meshes together into a gigantic.
But the game is completely procedurally generated, right?
No.
Am I thinking of something else?
Possibly. This is like a top-down strategy game with like missions and campaigns and stuff.
Huh.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, now that Jaws pointed out, I'll read Brian's. Brian says, Super Mario Brothers 3 is the best game ever made. Ergo, it is also the best threequel.
What about Super Mario Brothers 2?
I like that one quite a bit, and I know everybody else loves 3 so much more or whatnot, but I actually played more personally of 2 than 3. Not to say that 3 is a bad game. It is also very fun and awesome and extremely well made, but I just personally, for whatever reason, played 2 more, and I guess it's just because it has such a weird aesthetic because it was just such a strange insertion into the Mario Oeuvre, but yeah,
I'm a real Mario 2 booster as well. Three
is awesome though.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I only played 2 at my babysitter's. But we had a copy of 3, so I played more 3. Yeah, yep. I don't know. I think Brian is probably trying to be controversial by putting Mario 3 over Mario World, but. He's not here, so I will not argue somebody who is not here. And also, even if he was here, I probably wouldn't argue with him. It's 3 is a good game. Let's see here. Ben, what does Austin say?
Austin says, Donkey Kong Country 3 added a lot of smoothness that was missing from the first 2. Also added fun boating, and boating is a plus.
I like that. Yeah. I don't know if I ever played 3. I bet you I did. Those games were hot rentals.
I think I played the demo at Media Play.
Oh, yeah. On the kiosk?
Yeah.
Media Play. Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, Gabriel Knight, Blood of the Sacred, Blood of the Damned. Wow, that's quite a title.
It is unwieldy.
It's really nice to have Curry back as Gabriel, and this game was my first look at the Templars and all related to that. Also, this game came out just when they thought point-and-click games were dying, and these games tried so hard to go 3D. Simon the Sorcerer, Broken Sword, Seville, but failed miserably. To me, Gabriel Knight 3 didn't fail so hard. It might also be biased due to my love for the series. I like Beast Within most, so yeah, sue me.
Beast Within's amazing.
Yeah, none of this means anything to me. Can you translate, Cole?
Yeah, you would really dig Gabriel Knight, David. Specifically, the first one has you solving voodoo murders in New Orleans.
Sweet.
Yeah. The main character is voiced by Tim Curry, and your sidekick is Mark Hamill. Just a really good.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a really good game and an incredibly good series. Beast Within was the second one where they went full motion video, and it's actually pretty good. Like I want to replay it because I think that they did a really good job by and large. And then Gabriel Knight 3 is the third one, which kind of so pulled from the same source as the Da Vinci Code, but it tells a similar story, you know, about the Templars and, you know, the Priory of Sion and stuff like that.
Okay, sure.
But they went to 3D in kind of a bit of a janky way that really makes me wish that there was enough desire for a remake in a way that told the story without needing to fight the interface or fight just how dreadfully unstable the game is.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I feel like, you know how they have like, what is it, like, the 10th anniversary is, like, the Chartreuse anniversary or whatever?
Something like that, yeah.
I feel like I'm forming a theory that the third sequel is the Curry sequel.
what do you mean? What else bears that out?
I'm thinking of particularly Red Alert.
Okay. Oh yeah. That is absolutely true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a shame that Tim Curry doesn't work anymore. It's a shame that aging is a thing.
Yep.
Oh man, now I want to go watch Clue again. let's see here. I believe this is you, Jala, right?
I don't know. Is it me?
Let's say it is. Let's say Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, no contest for me, Castlevania 3. Did you do that on purpose, Greg? To rhyme. Anyway, I liked the first two, but this game was mind-blowing and is still a great game today.
It's incredibly good. And Greg took Chris's answer. So.
But that's okay, because Greg actually originally was going to say Super Mario 3, but that was already taken by the time he got on this. So, yeah.
Nobody's been shy about repeating before.
I know.
Three is the it's the prequel. It's the one where you can play as the Belmont, but also play as Maria and as Alucard, or the pirate who can jump around. Three's really good.
Is it still the weird control thing where you sort of manually control the whip and have to like try to swing it around?
No, that was Castlevania 4 on the SNES where you had that.
Cool.
Yeah. Castlevania 3 is a good answer. I picked up I didn't talk about this in the grind because these are old games and I've talked about them plenty, but I picked up the Castlevania collection and 3 was the first one I went to. Yeah. Let's see. Lindsay says, I am an evangelist for Dark Souls 2, and the DLCs are, for the most part, amazing. That being said, the Ivory King DLC is my favorite of the DLCs and the most interesting story-wise. Fun stuff. Yeah. Man, I'm really, just of all the Souls games, I am most overdue for a replay on Dark Souls 2, specifically because I miss those DLCs. I miss them quite a bit. I haven't messed around with them as much as I would like to recently. And Ivory King is great. Has the best final boss encounter of all the DLCs, I think. Which is saying something because Iron Crown or Iron King has a good final boss fight as well. Yeah, I'm talking to nobody on the show. I'm sorry.
I like how we've codified like a moment of silence to be an answer to questions now. Yeah,
really just leaving a pause for people to insert their own Dark Souls 2 opinions. Let's see, Ben, what does Warren say?
Warren says, since you used my first choice, Metal Gear Solid 3, For the post image, I'll go with Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. While it's not numbered 3, it was the third main line game in the series, and it took the good things from the second game and put a better combat system on top. This reminds me that I need to go finish my replay of the Ezio trilogy.
This is an incredible answer. if I would have thought of it, this would have been mine. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood is great. Didn't just add a good combat system on top of it. They added the kind of the Assassin's Guild stuff where you send people out on missions. They added the DLC where you were doing the reverse Turing test. Yeah, it's good. It's a good game.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of my favorite overall combat systems in any game I've ever played. Just particularly how high the skill ceiling is and the degree to which, you know, once you start, you know, exploring it, you can, you know, pretty legitimately pull off like movie quality action scenes.
It's good. I think it might have been, no, it wasn't before Batman, although the first Assassin's Creed was.
Right. Yeah. 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 Definitely has some of that DNA.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. David, what does Mike say?
Mike says, the first Saints Row was little more than a GTA knockoff, and the second one was a step in the right direction. But with Saints Row 3, Volition really nailed down its format and aesthetic. They also finally got this perfect tone for the series, knowingly silly and gleefully anarchic, while also avoiding falling into the everyone sucks edgelord trap that most other games of this type fall into.
That last part is so important.
especially since, you know, as they proceed to, you know, point out repeatedly, the first two games in the series got weirdly dark at times.
Yeah, it is really important that Saints Row 3, for as crass as it is just kind of celebratory through and through. Yeah, I have a very high opinion of that game. I'm happy that somebody brought it up. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I think this probably has to be mine. It's a little bit of a cheat in that, like, it's where I entered this series,
yeah, it's fine.
But yeah.
I mean, for this next one, Jala, what does Chris say?
Chris says, well, my go-to answers were taken. Oh, all of them, apparently. So I'll say The Witcher 3. I'm in the middle of playing it myself, and it's pretty great. Aside from that time, I tried to take on a bear at a very low level.
I know which bear he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an owl bear?
No, just the regular kind.
As a side note, have you seriously never heard of an owlbear before?
I had not. I went through an entire
day really?
And never ran into an owlbear.
How the hell?
I don't know. I'll have to go yell at my DM.
That's some basic ass D&D, dude. For real.
Has no respect for the classics. Come on.
Yeah, that's one of one of the interesting things is what there's only something like 10 monsters that technically, if I remember correctly, like D&D has the copyright to or whatever. I think that's my understanding is that's one of them.
I believe it. Yeah,
we must have been doing an open source campaign, I guess.
Yeah, you didn't have to pay a royalty.
Mm-hmm.
the reason I segued out of Saints Row into Chris's answer is The Witcher 3 is the one that I jumped into. I have no problem. I have no problem saying that that is that takes the cake. But
yeah, that's one of those games that I really wish I could play. Like I like so many things about it, but I just could not get into the actual gameplay, the controls.
I mean, it's a long game. You'd have to spend a lot of time playing a game you don't like to get the good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. David continues, The Witcher 3. The super obvious answer is Witcher 3 for all the reasons, but the award for most influential in my life has got to be Etrian Odyssey 3. It was the first game I played in a genre that I learned to love. Yeah. I never spent a lot of time with those, but they always seem like they would be partially my jam. The make-your-own-map first-person dungeon crawler dealie. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says, unpopular opinion, I think, but I love Uncharted 3. Getting to see Nathan and Sully meeting and learning about Nathan's insecurities and fears, both because of the trippy water and because of his relationships with Sully and Elena leaving him, and him not amounting to anything, was very humanizing and relatable.
Did you guys hear that?
Which part?
No, I heard Dennis shouting with anger from across the country. Yeah. No, his actual response would be, wait, there was an Uncharted 3? I thought they just skipped right to 4.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
He blacked it out. I remember it.
Yeah. I can see that.
I think it's only typically called a bad game because it sits in between of Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 4, and those are very tough games to compete against.
Yeah, stiff competition will do that. Yeah. Let's see. David, what does Marisan say?
Marisan says, is Super Mario Bros. 3 cheating?
No, no. If we let Brian do it. And trust me, I tried my hardest not to let Brian do it.
So I feel like this has come up before, and I didn't ask then, but which one is 3?
3 is the one with the Tanuki suit. It is the third and final main entry on the NES.
That's definitely the best one.
It's the one that has a 3 on the front of the game.
Yellow cover. He has the raccoon tail on the cover.
See, I guess I always get that one. And is it the next one that has like the frog suit 4?
Nope, 3 has the frog suit.
I don't think there's a 4.
The boot.
Yes.
The boot is my favorite.
Oh, the boot's good. The literally stomp. It's made for walking.
Yeah.
Let's see. Jello, what does Justin say?
Justin says, Morrowind. Totally agree. I love that game.
Protein answer.
Okay, dumb question. What was the second game in the series?
Daggerfall.
Okay, then what was the first game, I guess? I thought Daggerfall was Arena. The first one.
Yeah, it went Arena, Daggerfall, Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim.
Huh.
Marwin's a good answer. Let's see here. And then finally here, Michael says, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, a goof world of shooting lasers where you ride and fight dragons to music by Power Glove. Yeah.
Sorry. I was looking up the Marios. I guess I got confused because then they just started getting crazy with like, sometimes it's a land, sometimes it's a world.
Yep. No.
So the one I was talking about was Super Mario World, I think is my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. I'm partial to that one as well. Tons of people came out for that. I'm going to do mine real quick. Rock Band 3. Would be mine. The addition of the keyboard and pro instruments, specifically pro drums. And just the fact that you could just import everything into it to make it a massive, just omnibus Rock Band game, and the ease of use features that they brought in. Rock Band 3 and a walk? Yeah. Easily. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
Even though it doesn't have 3 in the name and it's going to make Cole hurt, I'll say Bioshock Infinite.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
I'm fine being outnumbered. It's okay.
I don't have any opinion about that subject, so I'm sorry.
So much angst over the way that game has been received.
I'll just be over here. Do you have more that you want to add, Ben?
No.
You don't have to justify yourself or anything. I wanted to give you the opportunity if you did. David, how about you?
Can't think of that many I've series I've played that have had that much in the way of prequels and trequels and quattros and whatever.
Trequels.
Trequels. Because
What about expansions?
Devil May Cry 3 was the second in this series. I won't I will fight anyone who says otherwise.
Okay. I mean, that can also be your answer. Do you love Devil May Cry 3 enough to also acknowledge that Devil May Cry 2 exists?
I see. Actually, the thing is, I think Devil May Cry 1 was either Devil May Cry 1 or DMC, I think, were kind of the highlights so far.
Okay.
Let's see. Stalker Call of Pripyat or whatever, is pretty good. Diablo 3 was a trash fire.
I think Stalker can be your answer.
Yeah. I mean, I can go with my my old standby and say, that the Stanley Parable 3 really improved on the original.
just poking me today. Njala, how about you?
This is real easy. I mean, like, most people should be able to guess this. Shining Force 3? Shining Force 3? Yeah. Or the other thing I would say would be Metal Gear Solid 3, since it was the first Metal Gear I played, and I did not play 4 or 5 yet. So
yeah.
I got 4 and 5, and I haven't played either one of them, although from what I have heard, I will not really be particularly excited about 4 and 5. I will only like part of it. So
I think ranks up there on the game that makes me the most sad.
Oh, it's like chapter one is the bulk of it. You will like that game for 40 hours and you'll be bummed out for 10. You don't have to play 4. In fact, if I have any authority, everybody is absolved from needing to play 4.
Okay, dumb question. what was 4?
4 was the one that was where you played as Old Snake. And it wrapped up the Revolver Ocelot. It's kind of the last mainline entry chronologically before Revengeance picks up.
Because I mean, I guess maybe this says something about why you're absolving people. Like, in terms of you know me at the having had friends that were super into Metal Gear series, like, I kind of remember Snake Eater being a thing and then hearing about 5.
Yep. Yeah. But before we started recording and I saw that Case suggested the question, I thought that maybe you had were thinking about Shining Force 3, Jala. And
no, and then like backtracked and made a question so that I could answer it that way. Okay, I was gonna say that's too complicated. I don't have enough time in my life for that.
it seemed tailor made. I figured you would have an answer when you walked into it.
I did not make the question for this.
Yeah, this is a good question, though. Thank you, Case. If you listening would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for these to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Jala, for posting this.
Yahoo!
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that excite us or things that we find interesting. Just real quick stories of what's happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, what's up with them cups?
I don't know. It's what the hell with the cups? I don't know. Cuphead? For some reason, Elon Musk thought it would be a good idea to make Cuphead available in newer model Teslas. So in summer of 2019, that's like real, like now, basically, part of the game is going to be playable from the car's dash. And only part due to Tesla's storage limitations, but the developer has been working on doing that, and they've been doing testing and stuff, so you can play video games in the dash of your car. Cuphead, a really complicated and absorbing game that you should not be playing in the dash of your goddamn car.
Thank you.
But anyway, so like when all the Teslas start to crash,
yeah,
you know why?
It won't just be because of autopilot.
Yes.
we can't say anything bad about Tesla or Musk, because people will come out of the woodwork. This is strange.
I just don't think it makes any sense for any fucking car. I don't care who made it or what kind type of car it is. That's like not a good idea.
No,
people are already distracted enough having a cell phone in their possession, let alone having a thing on their dash.
Yeah.
Like, I think the same thing about people who have movies that they watch when they're driving. No,
yes.
Stop that shit. Stop. Please.
Yeah. It's probably not a good thing when I see an announcement from your company and I think, isn't that against law?
To be fair, that's, you know, most things major corporations do.
Oh, true. Yeah. I figured there was some kind of standard that, like, oh, you know, like if you're backing up, like if you're backing up in a car that has a backup camera, like it won't let you do anything with like hands-free or whatever. Like all you should be doing is looking at this camera and making sure you don't run over a kid or dog.
Yeah. A kid or dog.
A kid
that's
or
a new breed.
Kid or dog. it is a dog hand-bred by Margot Kidder of Superman. That was dumb. Don't laugh.
I snorted.
I've got a quick one here. There's a new Doom game. No, I'm not talking about Doom Resurrection or whatever the name of that new 3D Doom that I'm excited about. John Romero, he used some authoring tools, specifically Doom Builder 2, to make kind of an unofficial/official free expansion for the original Doom, taking place after the fourth episode, putting it in between Doom 1, where you are, you know, leaving Hell and leaving Mars to get back to Earth to stop the invasion, but you are sucked in to, quote, the deeper, darker shores of Hell. And it is a Doom 1-ass game that is supposedly incredibly meaty, and based on things that I've seen, this game, which is called Doom Sigil, is actually really good too, and you can get it for free. So that is ridiculous. It was supposed to come out for the 25th anniversary of Doom last year, but a Doom expansion made by one of the original designers, big thumbs up on that.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know that I would that I would play through it all the way unless we decided to do it for something else, but yeah. I think that is a really cool and novel idea. Yeah. Let's see. David, what you got?
Yeah. So apparently India is kind of freaking out about video games. And in particular, you know, has become convinced that Player Unknown's Battlegrounds is corrupting the youths.
Hmm.
And so several cities in India have made it illegal to play the game and have actually been arresting and it seems implied maybe actually jailing kids that are caught playing it.
Wow.
Hmm.
Huh.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, you know, it seems like there's some discussion in the article that basically India is currently dealing with, you know, technology starting to spread to rural areas and kind of having social effects.
Yeah.
And this might be sort of part of that, you know, in effect, like culture war stuff.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that sucks. I hope that doesn't like ruin those kids' lives just because they want to play a video game. Like, I have no idea what their criminal justice system is, but if it's anything like America, getting into the system fucks you forever. So, yeah, that's a bummer. Especially for PUBG. That's so 2 years ago.
I don't know what's offensive about that game outside of the gameplay.
I feel like though it's one of those games where like if you just straight up explained it, it sounds pretty dark. You know, if you look at say like Battle Royale, the novel and then movie series, super dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, the game kind of gets around that by just not being serious at all.
Yeah, but being janky, you're running around with pots and pans on you.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, well, hopefully that evens out. And hopefully those kids don't have don't experience any kind of long-term consequences because of it. That sucks. Shouldn't be arrested for playing a game. I would think that would need to be said, but yeah. Here we are. Finally, Ben, what's the story you brought?
Yeah, so they released a release date for Death Stranding as well as a 8-minute and 50-second trailer for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they did this, I think, last week. It's pretty massive trailer. I think the one surprise I had in it is Nicholas Reifen-Wending, the director, is it going to be a character in the game? And so... Yeah, I know. I remember Guillermo del Toro is in it from, like, 2016, and he's still in it as well.
Hmm.
But apparently it's just, like, random movie directors are going to be in the game as well as actors.
Oh, Kojima's trying to get in the club.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
The trailer, I mean, it doesn't really answer any questions. It still looks really goofy and cool, I guess. The release date is November 8th. Which is going to be a week before the Star Wars game comes out, if that release date holds.
Yeah.
So you have a week to beat this game.
busy November. Yeah, there were some more gameplay details that were put out. Like, you are playing as a courier trying to, like, navigate really hazardous landscapes and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so I found this out this week, too. It wasn't from the trailer, but apparently the engine's built off of Guerrilla Games, the company that made, what's it called?
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, so it's built off of a game engine that they made. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so like some of the outdoor scenes kind of look similar to Horizon Zero Dawn, so you can kind of see that. Yeah. But yeah, some of the mechanics look really interesting, like... two of the tools, one of them is a ladder that you can just sit down at any point and mm-hmm. you can walk, which I guess that sounds like kind of like simpler, but I mean, that's really sweet that like you can connect any two points on the map and then like walk up it. It just kind of like makes the game completely open. Mm-hmm. There's another one that's like an anchor you can set and you can rappel down the map and other places. So again, just really impressive that the world's set up that you can interact with it like that. All that looks cool. It looks really weird though, so who knows? It'll probably be really good.
It's weird because I normally go on like media blackout for games that I'm super excited for, and I don't want to be spoiled or I don't want to be overhyped. I'm kind of like, what's a couple of steps up from lukewarm on this? Like, I am indifferent to it while still also knowing that I'm going to play it. So I'm just like not watching any of the trailers because I don't want to be like. Catfished into thinking it's about something it's not.
Because I was gonna say, like, even watching the trailer, I don't think it's spoiling anything because it does not make any sense.
Right Yeah, but November 8th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of the Level, and thanks once again for giving us that week off last week. We'll be back next time with even more, but you know the usual stuff you can do. It's been a little bit since we've got a rating or review, but if you go into Apple Podcasts, no longer iTunes, that was killed today. But if you go into Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating or review, it does help us. It is hard to quantify how, but I can say with confidence that it does. I know it sucks if you're not in Apple's ecosystem to go and kind of fight their services. It sucks even if you're in Apple's ecosystem, but know that it does make a difference, and we do see it. Otherwise, though, tell your friends. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast to watch for the multiplayer prompts, and check out the Patreon if you get a chance. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Yep, and you can hear Greta. She is starved for attention, so I'm going to do the outro. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckVTV.
I've been David Meinsmith.
I'm Jalachan in places, and also I'm just starved in general.
Oh.
And I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
I have a couple.
Okay.
No One Plans for Ninjas.
Okay.
And truer words have never been spoken.
What?
Truer words have never been spoken.
The other one I have is, hey, not my soul.
Hashtag not my soul.
I didn't say hashtag. I said, hey, comma, not my soul. But I mean, I guess you could just hashtag it
if you wanted to. I like that quite a bit because there's ambiguity, because there's the way it's delivered in the episode and there's the way it would read stylized. Hey, not my soul. Mm-hmm. I like that quite a bit. Was that all you had, Jella?
Uh-huh.
Ben, how about you?
I only had one. I had Accidental Goku, but I like Hey Not My Soul.
Yeah, I had an Accidental Goku too, but I would also agree Hey Not My Soul is the way
like
to go.
That's like the winner. I don't even care what anybody else has. That's going to be the title. I mean, you can still say your titles, but we've decided.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what were yours for the Atodes?
I slacked off this week.
There's always one. Unless there are three. Hey, not my soul. That wins.
Yep.
Cool.
Okay, all well, right. I'm going to go eat now.
Okay. Peace have a good y'all. Night. Good night, okay. Everybody. Have a good week.
See you guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.